at the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to our Champ Week edition of Courtside with Cats and Coach G. I'm Andy Katz along with my co-host Seth Greenberg. On this edition of our show, we're going to be joined by a couple of head coaches. Tim Jankovich of SMU, who's one of the finalists for the Naismith National Coach of the Year Award. SMU, the top seed in the AAC tournament. We'll also be joined by Wisconsin head coach Greg Gard, coming off that huge victory they had at home over Minnesota as they get ready for the Big Ten quarters later this week. Going to look ahead to, obviously, the conference tournaments and discuss a couple of issues that have certainly arisen over the last couple of days in college basketball. So, Seth, let's get right to it. Storylines in a couple of these tournaments that are going on, beginning as early as today, we're taping Tuesday, the ACC tournament. For me, it's the way the bracket was...
crazy.
Okay, I'm just going to throw this at you. I think...
it's a Final Four bracket.
But wait a minute. I think Florida State, if they can get their act together, they have a great path, potentially, to the final, because the top part of the bracket is loaded with Duke, Louisville, North Carolina.
Syracuse.
Bottom part, and Syracuse, we'll see what happens with their game against Miami. Florida State, if they can play as well as they do at home on a neutral court, they could be in the final and really help their seeding.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you're talking about Final Four teams, championship teams on the top side of the bracket. The bottom side's interesting because, look, Virginia Tech's in the last six games shooting almost 50% from the three-point line. Virginia's found their swag again defensively, and Kyle Guy's giving them a little bit of offense to balance off, to me, London Prentice, who's had a great year. But Florida State, they have a win at Virginia, which is huge. We know how athletic they are. At times, shot selection and commitment defensively to what you expect from a Leonard Hamilton team. But you look at the two brackets, and just the way it played out is just incredible. I mean, the top bracket looks like a Final Four bracket. And never count out the Fighting Mike Brays, because they don't turn it over. They make threes. They have a tough matchup. The big concern is, can they rebound the ball and post-defend over the weekend?
All right, so let's look at the Big East. I think the biggest question in the Big East is what to do with Xavier. Chris Mack making a strong case about the Musketeers, but the reality is, since February 4th, okay, their only wins are against DePaul. And guess what? In the Big East, they're going to play DePaul again. I think they have to beat DePaul and maybe have to beat Butler to even get into the field. I know they've had injuries. No Edmund Sumner. Javon Blewett was hurt for a little bit. What do you make of the Big East, especially Xavier?
Your team in this moment in time. I think they're outside looking in. I think they've got to beat Butler. And look, Chris Mack's a great coach, and the tradition of that program is phenomenal. But without Edmund Sumner, they haven't been able to beat the better teams in the league. As you look at it moving forward, Creighton's won games without Mo Watson. All right, Xavier has not won games without Edmund Sumner. So, and it depends on the other teams. I mean, if you look at this team right here in this moment in time compared to some of the other bubble teams, like if it came down to Xavier and Providence, you'd have to go with Providence. Because in this moment in time, all they've done is beaten Xavier, Butler, Marquette, Creighton. That's who they are right now. So I think they've got a lot of work to do. Seton Hall is my sleeper in the Big East. Seton Hall, they got three dudes. Des Rodriguez.
You love having dudes.
Yeah. Angel Delgado rebounds like he's Pac-Man. He gobbles up rebounds. I mean, he's ridiculous. They just, Kadeem Carrington, they can score it, and they're physical. I like their matchup zone. I like Seton Hall.
So the Big East tournament, of course, is at Madison Square Garden, the ACC in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. Let's go to the SEC tournament in Nashville. Kentucky obviously playing very well. To me, the most interesting potential matchup could be if there's a third Vandy-Florida matchup at the bottom part of the bracket. And look, the NCAA was clear with me. Mark Hollis said this again on Monday. He's the selection committee chair. Number of losses don't matter. So if Vandy loses here and has 15, they can still get in because they've got quality wins. So don't get hung up on...
Would you make that same point with Georgia Tech, though?
I mean,
because Georgia Tech has a couple of semi-bad losses.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to assess the two of them. The thing that really helps Vandy is Georgia Tech has really good home wins. Vandy has
Arkansas and Florida
on the road, and Tennessee they won on the road. So I think I like their road wins better.
I think Arkansas on the road. I'm not mistaken.
They definitely beat Arkansas. I'll have to check that.
But yeah, I think Georgia's going to be the X factor in this thing. Does Yonte Maton play? I think that's going to be interesting. Here's my take, though. Right now, And this is interesting. This is my Kentucky take. This is a little bit different than everyone else's. Season starts. All these young kids are all fired up, hyped up, ready to rock and roll, play with unbelievable energy and passion and running up down the court and just really playing at a high level. You get into the grind of the middle of the season, and what happened? They struggled because they basically lost attention to detail. But now these kids can see the finish line. So now all of a sudden, their defensive intensity's picked up. They're making fewer mistakes. They're sharing the ball better. They're more locked in. Kentucky's starting to round into a team that is going to be very dangerous moving forward, not just because of they have good players, but they have good players that are now locked in again.
And by the way, Vandy did win at Arkansas. All right, let's go to the Big 12, which I think has the potential. As great as the ACC could be, I think the Big 12 semifinals, if you get Iowa State, Kansas, Baylor, West Virginia in Kansas City on Friday, I think those could be the most competitive, most intense semis of any of these high majors. What's your storyline in the Big 12?
Well, I'm going to change that because I'm going to say Oklahoma State.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think Oklahoma
State.
Which
I still think would be intense and crazy.
It's four terrific teams, four different different styles of basketball, which I think makes it even more interesting. But Oklahoma State's number one in the country in offensive efficiency. You know, Evans, Forte, Carroll are really hard to play against. They've changed what they're doing defensively. I'm on the train for Brad Underwood. I think he's done an incredible job.
All right, let's shift to the Big Ten, where Northwestern lost at home to Purdue on Sunday, had the unbelievable win over Michigan. But look, the bracket kind of is good for them potentially if they were to play either Ohio State or Rutgers and then maybe move on to Maryland. You know, the most interesting matchup to me is at the bottom part of the bracket. What happens with Iowa and Indiana? Because I think Iowa, on Selection Sunday, if they were to win two games here, I think they could be the team that gets in that people didn't have projected in the field. What do you think?
Iowa's got good wins, and they're playing well at the right time. No doubt about it. I would not discount Indiana right now.
Okay.
I'll tell you what. Indiana, the other night, they played through Thomas Bryant on the left block. They were more locked in defensively. And what happens if Indiana beats Iowa and Wisconsin?
Then I think they're in the picture, too.
So, I mean, you've
that's
got...
That game could be huge.
The Big Ten, the interesting thing to me is there's six or seven teams that can win a tournament. And Purdue is the best team in the league, but they haven't separated themselves to that extent. Wisconsin, obviously, they got a little bit of their mojo back against Minnesota, but there's still ifs. The reason I'm a little higher on Wisconsin right now is they guarded, obviously... They got away from their identity for a while and were more offensively oriented than they were defensively oriented. When I think of Wisconsin, I think of control the tempo of the game offensively and defensively. But I think six teams could win that tournament.
And it's being played in Washington, D.C. We'll have to see what kind of advantage Maryland has. Let's move to the Pac-12 in Las Vegas. I don't know if there's a bubble team. I don't know if USC's in. I think USC's got to win multiple games. How about the bottom part of this bracket, though?
SMU win, which is a pretty good win.
True, okay.
And a UCLA win.
So if you get another UCLA win, I think they're in. So that would mean winning two games. The bottom part of the bracket, either UCLA or Arizona, they're going to have to probably beat one or the other, obviously, and then beat Oregon. So this bottom part of the bracket, I think, will affect the tournament seeding, NCAA tournament seeding, more than maybe any other, because UCLA and Arizona both could really rise up by beating each other and then
the
Oregon.
The ceiling's the roof?
Yes, the ceiling is the roof.
Just checking. UCLA, to me, it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. They were very good at Arizona. I think they've improved defensively. Arizona struggled against zones. If someone slips up, can the winner of the pack become a number one seed? Maybe.
What if UCLA beats Arizona and Oregon?
Well, then they'd have... I don't think if Gonzaga wins, they're going to stay number one. I think if Carolina gets bopped early, then it could open up some type of conversation.
Yeah, that's my scenario. I think if Carolina loses in the first game and UCLA does all that, I think they could be in. All right, two last quick ones here before we get to Greg Gard. We just mentioned Wisconsin and Tim Jankovich from SMU, our coaches that will be on the podcast. The AAC, I don't see a bubble. I think it's SMU, Cincinnati are the two best teams, and I think those are the two teams that will meet in the XL Center on Sunday. What do you see?
Yeah, the X factor to me is going to be Houston. I mean, Houston could potentially
wild card.
Win this tournament. They're a wild card, maybe give them a third bid, but I would say those. I don't think UCF can over the course of the tournament win enough games.
And the last one, the A-10, which I think will be kind of a wild tournament because Rhode Island, I think, still has to win a couple of games, but I could say a number of teams could win that tournament. And that one will be in Pittsburgh this year, by the way.
Yeah, Rhode Island's an interesting team because they have the Cincinnati win, which was good. They won at the VCU win the other day. They seem to be playing better, and they have pieces. Son Martin blocks shots. E.C. Matthews can score. Terrell is a tough matchup. Iverson rebounds to basketball. Life on the bubble. Ain't no big surprise.
But don't you think they got to win a couple games or at least one?
Yeah, I think they've got to win at least two games. I think they're in a situation they got to win. They got to win a couple games. St. Bonaventure with Adams is a tough out. And then again, they're going to have a chance to play Dayton. A win against Dayton could put them in.
All right, that'll wrap up our quick look at the conference tournaments that are getting underway right now.
2 minutes to play, 11 to shoot, and here's Koenig again against Mason. Koenig, another three, left of the circle, got it! Bronson Koenig, the shooting touch has returned. 64-49, Wisconsin, 144 remaining.
And that call, courtesy of my good friend Matt LePay, who's been there forever, Badger Sports Network at Learfield. Production there, and we bring in on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, Wisconsin head coach Greg Gard. So a much, much, much needed victory at home on Senior Day against Minnesota. What was the difference, Greg, in that game versus the previous couple where you guys obviously weren't able to close out?
Well, I think, number one, we made shots down the stretch of the Minnesota game, and we were good enough defensively against Iowa to win, and weren't good enough in the last 2 minutes to close it out. Made some uncharacteristic mistakes, and give Iowa credit. They made some shots. Bohannon hit a big shot on when we couldn't secure a defensive rebound in the last 10 seconds. But Sunday, I thought we were obviously as connected defensively as we've been. And then obviously offensively, you heard the Koenig three, but I thought offensively we were much better in the second half. And obviously, when the ball goes in, it cures a lot of ills and covers up for other miscues at times.
This program has rarely had a crisis of confidence, but when you lose three in a row at Ohio State, at Michigan State, that home loss to Iowa, how much did everyone just need a win like you guys got on Sunday heading into the Big Ten tournament?
I think anytime you can get a win, it helps build confidence. And I think the one thing, we got back to being more of us, of what's made us good. In Ohio State, I thought we were uncharacteristically loose defensively, somewhat better against Michigan State, considerably better against Iowa, and then we finally got things offensively to go our way and get a flow going a little bit too, and guys make shots and got back to a little bit of the swagger and fun that comes with making shots and having good things happen.
Coach, when things get a little bit of sideways, obviously everyone has ideas on what you need to do with your team, but When you guys did struggle, what was the most important message you gave your team to make sure they stayed in the present and got to the next game?
Stay the course. Don't flinch in the moment. Just make sure we're going to continue to work on the things that we need to get better at. There aren't going to be irrational, out-of-the-box changes. We just need to get better at what we're doing and make a few adjustments here and there. But it was, that was the main message. And obviously you just you keep trying to stay as positive as possible. We went back to some basic things defensively that we hadn't done in probably a good month and a half. So just to reemphasize some things defensively, positioning, closeouts, what we were doing away from the ball. And I think that helped us. I think it was evident in the Iowa game we were better defensively. And then obviously when the ball goes in, like I said before, Seth, makes things, it energizes both ends of the floor that much more. And, we played with a lot more confidence and looseness about us than we hadn't had in a while.
Your style of play moving forward, you've got a couple of days before, obviously, the conference tournament gets going, but your style of play moving forward into the NCAA tournament, why do you think the Wisconsin system per se has been so successful in postseason play?
Well, I think we don't deviate too much. I think the key with postseason play is can't forget what got you there and what's made you good. So defensively, we'll have to continue to be very good, and that'll start with what we see, regardless of who we see on Friday, Indiana or Iowa. Transition defense will be a huge key to it. And then obviously you got to make shots. The teams that we've had that have gone deep have hit timely shots, have had some offensive burst to it, and that's hopefully the confidence in the aggressiveness that we exhibited on Sunday. We can carry that forward and continue to get better and be more consistent as we go into the postseason.
Greg, you guys still have a lot of basketball left to be played, but you know, as you watched the seniors sort of wave to the crowd on Sunday, I mean, these guys have had such an impact, imprint on this program over the last couple of years. And I know Ethan Happ, obviously, sensational sophomore. He's first-team All-Big Ten, and he's sort of on the cusp of, you know, this group of players over the last couple of years. But as you take a step back, what has this collection of players meant, and in what way have they transitioned this program?
Well, I don't know if transition is the right word, because we were very successful before this class arrived. You know, they were young pups when we went to two Final Fours.
Well, I'm including this whole era of players, basically, because I'm including group.
I think the one thing is these four guys each took their own unique route to get to Wisconsin, and obviously each had their own unique journey while they were here. I mean, you start with Zach Showalter, who came as a walk-on. Eventually earned a scholarship, started 66 games, and now just got named to the all-defensive team in the Big Ten yesterday. Vito Brown sat on the bench for 2 years, and then last year led us in three-point shooting. And obviously Hayes and Koenig were able to get into the rotation early as freshmen and be a part of those two Final Four teams. So they got on the map a little bit sooner than Showalter and Brown, but Each also has taken their own unique journey here. You know, obviously Koenig and Hayes have been socially active in various areas, and they've all done a terrific job academically. They'll all graduate here in May. So it's been a, you know, unique group from an individual standpoint, but also collectively the success and the experiences they've been able to share together have been pretty special.
Well, Greg, we appreciate you spending a couple of minutes with us. Good luck on Friday in the Big Ten quarters.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Talk
good
to
luck,
you
bud. Thanks.
And when we come back, we'll be joined by SMU head coach Tim Jankovich. Now for a word from Seth Greenberg.
Courtside with Katz and Coach G is supported by New York Life. When your finances are under control, you're free to think about the important stuff, like basketball. New York Life can help get you there. New York Life is a mutual insurer, which means they answer to the policy owners, not Wall Street. Become part of the NYL family. And that could mean you. Cool story, right? Start a plan today and find out more about being good at life at NewYorkLife.com.
Welcome back to Courtside. All this month, we're asking you to tell a friend about a podcast they love. Right now, think of a friend, your mom, anyone you care about. What podcast would they really love? Got it? Now do it. Tell them about it in real life or on social media. And if they don't know about podcasts, show them how. Tell us what you recommend with the hashtag Tripod, T-R-Y, pod. The show we'd recommend is Around the Rim, ESPN's women's basketball podcast. While Seth and I have you covered for Selection Sunday, be sure to tune in to ESPNW's Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson for Selection Monday. She and the crew will break down the 2017 women's NCAA tournament regional brackets and much more. Thanks for spreading the word.
There it is. The horn sounds. The perfect 18-0 mark at home. The first ever undefeated season at Moody Coliseum for the SMU Mustangs. 27 wins, extending the school record for most regular season wins. And they're 17-1 in the league, extending their record for most conference wins ever. And for the second time in three seasons, they win the regular season crown in the American Athletic Conference. 103-62, the final today over the Memphis Tigers.
And that call courtesy of the Mustang Sports Network. And now joining us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, SMU head coach Tim Jankovich, one of the finalists for the Naismith National Coach of the Year, and deservedly so. So, Tim, you take over for Larry Brown. You were the coach in waiting, so it's not like this is your first rodeo. You've been a head coach before. But why was there such a seamless transition when you moved over that one seat?
Well, first of all, I need to get a copy of that recording, because that's a real pick-me-up right there. I need to be playing that all day long. But, I think a big part, you know, if someone would have come in from the outside and you know, had a complete shift, I think it would have been much tougher. But the fact that, you know, I was here, Coach and I came together, and I've been here the whole time, and then even last year, and this was such a negative, but it turned into a tiny bit of a positive. You know, we had the probation, and Coach had a suspension of 9 games. So I coached the first 9 games, and then, of course, he came back. And that was, to me, you know, it's awful for everyone involved. But in the scheme of things, if you're asking about this year, it probably you know, helped a little bit in terms of a transition. So the other part that's making an easy transition is when you have good players, any transition is pretty easy. And we have really good players and great character.
Tim, you guys lose Nick Moore, and you're also coming off a year where you had that postseason ban. What happened in the spring when you had to deal with sort of the after effects of that and make sure that this program was still ascending despite those basically those obstacles that you guys had to deal with?
Yeah, you know, there was some a little bit of tense times when you looked at it, because, you know, the guys in this program, they certainly didn't sign up for postseason ban and losing great seniors like Nick Moore. You know, especially in this day and age where you know, guys will look for a greener pasture. And so, you know, we were a little worried about that. And luckily, again, I mean, these guys, they're great character. They never whined or complained or bitched or never appeared to waver on their commitment here. And, you know, they've been through an awful lot. They've been through an awful lot. And to watch them handle it, I mean, you would, you know, your own child, you would never hope handled adversity better than these guys have. And I'm just really proud to coach them, because I've watched so many things thrown at them and they've just kind of brushed it off their back, and they've been amazing.
Tim, you did return a core unit, but you lost a very important part of your basketball team last year in Nick Moore. How have you been able to negotiate this season so seamlessly without the guy basically you guys just handed the ball to for two consecutive years?
Well, I have to say there were a lot of sleepless nights going into the season because Nick was our security blanket. Come on, you know, for several years, he won so many games for us, you know, late. And like the last 3 minutes, if you just watch us for the last several years, he won so many games. And so, you know, I felt very worried about that. I did feel like we had, you know, very good talent returning and all that. But gosh, when you're 3 year starting point guard, twice player of the year. So that was our biggest concern. But, you know, what we've become is just we've got a bunch of point guards now. Shake Milton, I guess, is our number one point guard, and certainly an outstanding one. But we're kind of an interchangeable part team. I mean, literally, I feel like we have five guards on the floor, and we play that way, and different guys have it, different guys handle it. And so, you know, I think necessity is the mother of invention, and we needed to figure out how best to play, and it's just it's kind of fallen into place for us.
You talk about that style of play. You guys spread the court and almost play with five perimeter guys and attack matchups. How do you think that style translates into the way the game is being officiated now and then moving forward in the NCAA tournament?
I hope great on both counts. We're going to see. We're certainly going to see. But it is a real, I will say this, it's a real pure form of basketball. I've never been lucky enough to ever coach a team in all the years I've coached that was like this. You know, we always had our point guards and our wings and our big guys, you know, pretty much like everyone else. But this is certainly a pure way. I think it, from the officiating standpoint, I think it's really good because, you know, we continue to be more hands off, you know, and so spreading a court and putting pressure on a defender one-on-one, I think, is a very good thing. Hopefully that holds in the NCAA tournament. You know, I think a lot of it does have to do with officiating. You kind of get used to your officiating in your conference, and then when you go to the tournament, you're gonna see a lot of people from different areas of the country, and you don't know how it'll be officiated. So we'll see, but in my mind, it should, you know, I think it should equate pretty well.
You've been around a lot of great players. Semi Ojeleye, he is special. Did you realize he was that good when he transferred over?
No, and you're right. He's really, really good. We, you know, he grew up in Kansas, and I'm from Kansas, and our associate head coach is from Kansas. So both of us, you know, we pay a lot of attention to your home state, of course, and we watched him in high school and thought he was a really, really good talent. But, you know, we just given his, you know, what happened at Duke, we did not know that he would be nearly as good as he was. We thought he was a good player. We thought he could be a real good player. But to be doing what he's done in his first year for us has been amazing. And I do want to say he's as hard a worker away from the court, putting his own time in, as anyone I've ever coached. And if ever someone should be deservedly rewarded, it's him. I mean, he's like a machine. He just never stops, and he's so driven, and it shows up in his play. I mean, he's just incredibly efficient, and he's talented. And he's a really, really tough matchup.
You know, to that point, we've really seen transfers blossom, and it can be hit or miss. You know, I think of your case with Ojeleye. You know, think of another Duke one in years past, you know, Benajay over at Syracuse. But even at Gonzaga this season, Nigel Williams-Goss, Jordan Matthews, Jonathan Williams. This is the new era that we live in here in college basketball. Why do you think, though, these transfers have been so successful in recent times making a smooth transition?
That's a great question. I love transfers because I think you've a lot of times, not always, like in Shimmy's sake, not so much, but a lot of times you have a better evaluation of who they're really going to be at the major college level because they've already played. Another thing that happens, I think, is once someone transfers, they completely unpack. You know, they have to go all in. There's no one telling them, you know, this isn't going well, so start thinking about going somewhere else. So I think that takes place with some where they just become fully invested because they have to. And then I think another thing, maybe the biggest part is, and I actually live this, okay, so I'm not proud to say, but way back when I actually transferred after my freshman year. And what I learned from that is once you've been in college and played college basketball for a year, you have 10 times the understanding of what you need to be looking for than you do when you're coming out of high school and you have no idea, you know. And so I think there's a lot of good decisions being made when people transfer because I think they have a better handle on what they need to help them succeed. So I think it's kind of all of the above, but I love having transfers. We've had, you know, Nick Moore was one for us. He, you know, came with me here, and Jordan Tolbert was great for us. And I mean, I could go down the line. We've had a bunch, and it has really been good for us.
Recruiting in general, Tim, you think about it, do you see coaches now holding a scholarship for a potential fifth-year guy? Thinking, all right, moving forward,
yes.
Recruiting certain guys potentially that they say, you know, we might not get him the first time, but potentially get him on a bounce back. How has that changed just how you go about recruiting and building your team and balancing your classes?
Yeah, well, I think everyone's different in that, but I definitely think there's a lot more holding a scholarship than there was, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years ago for sure. And I know everybody has their own philosophy, but if you just look at the transfer market, obviously most everyone is on board. You know, everyone is not just saying, hey, I only want freshmen, or I only want freshmen and junior college, you know, transfers. It's a different era. You can look at it negatively. I know some people, they'll see the number and they'll say, oh my gosh, there's 600 people transferring. How horrible. And on the other hand, you know, a young man only gets one career, you know, you only get one. And so in a lot of times, I think transferring is healthy for everyone. You know, not everyone can play. 13 players on scholarship is too many to play. So why does a guy want to, you know, just watch his career go by and sit there? So I think, you know, I think it can be a really good thing for everyone involved, and I think most people have bought into it in this day and age.
Tim, I interviewed Mick Cronin on Monday, and as always, fiery about everything.
Yeah.
And even in defense of SMU, saying how good you guys are and people don't fully grasp, you know, the talent you guys have and how good you could be in the NCAA tournament. So for whatever reason, SMU and Cincinnati, even though you guys have been ranked, have not received as much publicity this season. So for those that have not been paying attention, how would you project the possibilities for you guys and Cincinnati in the NCAA tournament?
Well, it's easier for me to speak of them. You know, for us, I'd rather others judge. I have a lot of confidence in our team, and I love this team, and I'm optimistic for them, but as far as bragging on somebody, I think Cincinnati is outstanding. I mean, I just think that would be a tough matchup. They have tremendous inside players that they play to that can really score. And not only can they really score, they can really pass. And the bad news, or good news for them, bad news for all of us in our league, is now they've got great shooters on the perimeter. So this is the best offensive team Cincinnati that we've seen from Cincinnati in the last 4 years by quite a bit. And then, as always, they're tough as can be. They play great defense. They've got two different defenses. They've got a matchup zone and a man, and they can play them both equally effectively. I think they're a great team. I really do. I think they'll be just such a tough match. And if we have to face them again in the tournament, it'll be incredibly difficult.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for on Sunday, because I'll be there at the XL Center. Hey, before we let you go,
it's a big game when Andy Katz is in the house.
We're raising the roof on that one. The ceiling is the roof.
The ceiling is the roof.
Whatever that means. Before we let you go, Tim, you've got a pretty important fan that shows up, but seems like at every game at Moody Coliseum. 43 shows up. President Bush, any good stories about that you can share in terms of his interest in your program?
Yeah, he's amazing, you know, and it's surreal, I have to say, because he sits right across basically from me, and you just can't help but like look over there and go, oh my gosh, you know, even though you can't, I never get used to it. But not long ago, at one of the timeouts, he rips his shirt open, and he's got, our student section is called the Mob, and he's got a Mob t-shirt on. The place goes absolutely crazy for it. I thought it was amazing. But then the next game, when I saw him, I walked up before the game and said, hey, you know, that was so funny. That was so great. I said, what do you have under your sweater today? And without even hesitating, he said, I got a four pack under here. So he's a clever guy. He's really funny. And he's just so supportive. And he and his wife, they come and it's great for everybody here.
Well, Tim, we appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you this week, later in the week in Hartford.
Great. See you.
Congratulations, so buddy.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right, Seth, so I got a couple of issues before we get to our student section. Number one.
Issues?
Yes, so I just want to bounce some things off you since we last had our podcast. First of all, Kim Anderson out at Missouri. What's your reaction?
Disappointed. I mean, look, it's a win and lose game. You got to win games. You got to show progress. He inherited an impossible situation for a lot of reasons. NCAA probation, unrest on their campus socially, had a group of players that probably didn't buy into him in the same way maybe they would have bought into the previous coaching staff. When you take over a job, those players become your players, but it's a choice they have to make whether they're going to buy into your new vision for the program. So Kim Anderson is, in a lot of ways, Missouri basketball. It's sad to see it end that way. The manner in which he handled himself, though, not surprising, with class, with the concern of the institution first, and Missouri is a good job. It's just
how good a job.
It's a good job because they're passionate about basketball
in the SEC too.
In the SEC, when he got the job, though, in that moment in time, it wasn't a good job.
Georgia, the athletic director, I thought this was great. Came out early on Tuesday, Greg McGarrity, and said that Mark Fox is essentially back. I'm paraphrasing. He said, and I'll give you this direct line here. We look forward to Mark leading our program next year, and all our efforts are centered on postseason play. It's unfortunate we need to respond at this time because there was a report out by Yahoo that they were looking at other candidates. But it was necessary to quiet these unfounded rumors. You know Mark very well. I do as well. This was just a tough year. They lost a lot of close games. They don't have Yante Maton for the last couple of weeks. We don't know if he's going to be back at all here in the postseason. What do you think of this statement by the AD backing Mark Fox?
I think it was terrific. Your word is your bond. This athletic director has come out and said, this is our coach moving forward. He's given him his support. Now Mark knows, do to think, control what he can control. Coach his team, get out and recruit, continue to build his program. And that's really what it comes down to. To me, if the report was unfounded to some extent, it's irresponsible. And that's where everyone wants to be first, in, I'm going to call in your business, the insiders, the journalists. It's not as important to be first as to be right.
I've always said that.
And to me, it's irresponsible to try to get ahead of something because it's hard to retract that. And even those words really create tremendous doubt. As Mark goes out and tries to recruit in the spring. So to me, it's unfortunate. It's irresponsible. And if the athletic department's word is its bond, it's time to move on.
All right, one other point here, but I'm curious what your opinion is on this. I brought this up on our show on ESPNU on Monday. And I heard, I think, Jay Billis say this on your show on College Game Day, but I'd like them to get rid of the rule that prevents same teams from the same conference playing in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I just think it complicates everything in the bracketing process. You know, now you're allowed to play in the second round if you met once in the regular season, Sweet 16, twice. If you met twice, you can't meet to the Sweet 16.
But they haven't moved a team on a seed line since 2014.
No, right, and both of us are in agreement. So then, first, I don't think it would happen that often, but just to prevent that, are you okay with, if it just worked out that they happen to be next to each other, that hypothetically, you know, USC would play Arizona in the first round?
Yeah, I'm totally comfortable with it. I'm totally comfortable with it. I think that you want to seed the tournament as close to the way you feel as you scrub the teams in the order in which they're scrubbed, no matter what league they play in. And that, to me, that's just common sense. The other thing, there's been a lot of conversation last week on conference tournaments. Are they good? Are they bad? As we see teams get upset, we see Belmont get upset, and we see Oakland get upset and Valpo get upset. They're great because we're having these magical moments. We're having Iona Siena. We're having BU Lehigh. We're talking about these teams that if we didn't have this situation, there wouldn't be a conversation. The one thing you need to do if you're in a one-bid league or a lower conference, real simple. The team that wins regular season either A, hosts your conference tournament.
Which a lot of them do that.
Or B, as you move on in the tournament, you stay play all your games on home sites, and the higher seed or lower seed, how you're looking at it, automatically gets the home game.
And some of them do that. The NEC does that. And I would actually like to see in some of these cases, maybe a double bye, you know, rather than playing the eighth place team if you're the top seed.
Sometimes that works against you. You sit for two games, like under the ACC has it. You sit for two games, and all of a sudden, you want to get your juices flowing a little bit. You know, sitting 2 days and watching. So here's the thing people don't understand. Tournaments start. If you're a team, and even in another tournament, and you don't play to the evening session, after shoot around and what you're doing, your players are watching every one of these games. It's exhausting. They're in growth. They're basketball guys, man. Their friends are playing. And watching games for 2 days before you get to lace them up and raise your temperature, it's not easy.
Well, I just to say this. We had great atmospheres on Sunday. I was in the studio in the Big South and the A-Sun because they were home games. Now, both home teams won. But that doesn't always be the case. But Winthrop and Florida Gulf Coast had great atmospheres by hosting. I think that obviously helps the conference. You get your best team at least in position to get there, and it was good television. All right, Josh, what do we got in the student section?
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
Guys, let's go through some rapid-fire student section questions today. This first one from Terry Neidefer, at Terry Neidefer. Says Caleb Swanigan is setting records we haven't seen in decades. Meanwhile, Frank Mason's stats are under many previous National Player of the Year guys. Why is Mason greater than Swanigan when it comes to Player of the Year conversation?
I don't know if he's greater. I think it's a tough call, and I said this the other day, Seth. I don't know if you agree with me. I think we're going to see multiple winners of the various National Player of the Year awards.
Denzel Valentine, Buddy Hield.
Yeah. I think someone's going to win the Wooden, someone's going to win the Naismith, someone's going to win the Robertson, someone's going to AP. And I think among the candidates of Swanigan, Frank Mason, Josh Hart, maybe even Lonzo Ball, I think you're going to see multiple winners.
Yeah, I hate to compare two kids because they both have had magnificent, magical seasons. I would say the reason that Frank Mason's gotten so much love is his toughness. He makes big plays in big moments. And it's not always scoring. Sometimes it's just a scoring pass. He can defend. He's leading the number one team in the country. We've got a chance to watch him grow. And on the biggest stages, he's made the biggest plays.
Next one from Sean Iske, at Sean Iske. He says, despite losing the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament, is Illinois State's resume good enough to make the dance?
This is going to be a tough call. We just had the former Illinois State head coach, Tim Jankovich, on the show, and Dan Miller replaced him. Look, I think the problem for Illinois State would be that the last two games against Wichita State, they got handled. I know Mekhi'Lon McIntosh didn't play in the 42-point loss to Wichita State. It really will depend, Seth, on what happens in these other tournaments over the next couple of days.
They're a good enough team to win a game in the NCAA tournament. Their resume is not going to put them in the NCAA tournament, my gut feeling is. And the reason being, if you compare their resume to even Monmouth last year, Monmouth had USC and Notre Dame, had the three bad losses. These guys don't have that quality win on their side, yet they still have the bad losses. I don't think they get it.
All right, Andy, let's have one more student section question here, and you can answer this one on your own, because Seth had to run off and do SportsCenter. He's the hardest working man in show business, or at least the second hardest working man. And this final question is from Drew Allen at The Drew Abides, of course. And Drew says, which team do you give the least chance of winning their conference tournament, but the best chance to make the second weekend and possibly even go further in the NCAA tournament?
Interesting question. And this, you know, we just went through all the conference tournaments. So not going to win it, yet could go to the second weekend. So we're talking about sort of a middling team, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not necessarily, because I mean, there's only one team that can win the ACC. There's only one team that can win the Pac-12.
Oh, well, there's a lot of teams I could put in this category.
Exactly.
I mean, I could go a number of different directions in the Big 12, you know, whether it's West Virginia, Baylor, Iowa State, or Oklahoma State. I think Florida could get to the second weekend and not win it. Certainly Butler in the Big East. In the ACC, I do really like Florida State and Notre Dame. I think they could both win a number of games and get to the second weekend. I don't see a team from the A-10 getting to the second weekend. I will say this. Whoever doesn't win between SMU and Cincinnati, yeah, they're both capable of getting to the second weekend out of the AAC. And clearly in the Pac-12, I think all three are going to be in the second weekend. I think all three of them, depending upon how the brackets break, they could be in the Elite Eight. And that's how good I think Oregon, UCLA, and Arizona are.
I like that answer. You kind of gave him a lot of answers here, but hey, whatever. It's all about variety here, right, Andy?
Right. And another sleeper team in the Big Ten, Minnesota.
Fair enough. Keep those questions coming. We will need them throughout the tournament. Use the hashtag student section. And a reminder, Andy, this coming Sunday is our big blowout shows. We'll have four shows breaking down each region in the NCAA tournament. It's our favorite show to do all year, so mark your calendars for that one. Selection Sunday, March 12th. They'll be coming out pretty late in the evening, so they'll either be there for you that night or first thing when you wake up on the morning of Monday, March 13th, but you won't want to miss it.
And so where can people find our podcast?
They can find it in a number of places. Pretty much any podcast provider, all podcast providers carry our podcast, but the best place to do it is in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. You can subscribe there. Get alerts every time a new podcast is published. Be the first to know when the new podcast drops.
All right, and as always, you can follow me on Twitter at ESPN Andy Katz. You can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth on Hoops. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Katz and Coach G.